how we began many of our adventures, making sure that everybody was present in Honduras. So it's how we begin our gathering this morning. We have a number of announcements, and the first one is coming from Paula.
Yeah, Paula.
So I want to say to those who are very giving, thank you so much. We had a great time. Many people went, and I saw the pictures.
I missed it. I was there, but it wasn't here.
But for the next one, it will be August 5th, which is Sunday. It will be following the gathering from 12:30 to 3. It's a field day intergenerational event. It's going to be in the Manus at the Manus Community Park in the Kiwanis Pavilion, which is one of the first pavilions. And we will have some food, we will have some side dishes provided by many of you, I hope. Or if not, at least a $5 donation is very much appreciated. And there will be games like relay races, human ring toss. All adults and children are invited, and adults bring your friendly childhood attitudes and spirits, so you can join in the fun. I am looking for volunteers, and if you feel like you would like to be a part of that, just come to me or Joanne and let us know. I would really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you there. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay, and then following on August 11th, which is a Saturday, it's Night Under the Stars. This is probably one of the best ways to introduce people to the barn. It's in our backyard. For those of you who haven't been there, you bring lawn chair, blanket. Our yard is filled with people. The band plays. Everybody brings a snack to share, whatever beverage you want to drink, bring that along with you. And the band plays for us some of their favorite music. And then afterwards, we have a fire and s'mores. And it is just a lovely evening to relax. It's a lovely evening to get to know people. You can mix and mingle all night long. If those of you who are visiting today as a result of the Honduras event would love to come and enjoy this evening with us, we certainly invite you. Our address is on the sign-up sheet, and all you need to do is give your name, the number of people coming in your party, an email, and then just a snack item so we don't have all cheeses. I'm going to have one on each side, and if you kind of keep passing it to your side, this is the first day we're signing up for this, but you're really fun. Talk to the figure. Would that help us introduce you to one? And look, now we've got one of the last staff. So you do not want to miss Night Under the Stars. The last 2 years it has been canceled because 1 year, Mr. Ford Gianelli was involved in an accident, and then the next year, his wife was involved in an accident. We kind of need them. So this year, what are we praying for with the Gianelli family?
No accidents.
Yes. We'll go with them. And then, for those of you who are visiting, Paula Figueroa, who gave our first announcement, is our children's worker. I'm Sue Pai-Griover. I'm one of the pastors, and we're soon to meet Joanne Marquetto, the other pastor. Okay, so we want to thank these folks who went on behalf of us to Habitat and serve breakfast to those who are building the house last Saturday, and we're delighted that they can do that. We will have opportunities in the future to do that. And then this Wednesday coming up is WOW at 6:45 at St. Timothy's. All the information is on your half sheet. If you need a half sheet, there wasn't one on your sheet. There's some on the back right back there. It is on rain or shine. If it rains, we move it inside at St. Timothy's. Otherwise, bring your lawn chair or a blanket. And the worship gathering outside will have totally different stories than today. We have so many stories to tell. But if you really like the day, you'll love Wednesday. So please come and support that. Joe.
Hi, everyone. My name is Joanne. I'm the other pastor here at the barn, and we would like to welcome you here this morning to the gathering. If this is your first time worshiping with us this morning, would you raise your hand? We'd just like to share a gift with you. This is not your first time here. Just raise your hand, and would like to just say thanks for popping by, a little gift and some information about the barn. We'd like to just say welcome as you're worshiping with us this day. Also, I'd like to ask you, for those who are here, there are some clipboards along the center aisle. If you would pick those up and sign in and let us know that you're here, we would greatly appreciate it. At this time, are there any wiggle worms in the gathering? We're hoping to encourage our older kids to stay in the gathering. They should have gotten some handouts and worksheets to learn all about Honduras, and they could follow along with the message this morning. Did all of our kids get handouts and clipboards and markers? Raise your hand if you didn't. Oh, we have one right here. Paula's going to be right by, and she's going to hand you a clipboard. All right, excellent. So now what I'd like to do is I'd like to just invite you to a moment of center as we enter into our time of worship. So if you'd like to take a moment, just close your eyes and take a deep breath in, breathing in the spirit, breathing in new life, feeling that air move into your body and fill your lungs. And then breathe out, breathing out stress, breathing out all the tension, breathing out your worries, breathing in a moment to be present, be here, to awaken your senses to this moment, and breathe out everything that has been worrying you, that has been challenging you, any conflicts you might have this week, any concerns. And let's just take a moment to be present, to be here, to be with God, and to be with each other. This morning, it's going to be a little bit different. And for those of you who are new or who are here for the first time, we're going to be celebrating a new opportunity that we've had this week. An opportunity to travel to Guatemala, Honduras, to the Hearts for Honduras School. The Hearts for Honduras School was started in 1998 with the support of Liberty Corner Presbyterian Church in New Jersey. And we have partnered with them for years, and farmers have attended trips with Liberty Corner, dental trips, mission trips, experience the school, to learn about the school, and to immerse themselves in the majority world. This year was a little bit different. We have partnered with Liberty Corner in a different way, and the barn has organized our very own trip to understand and learn about this school. And this was a trip that was 2 years in the planning and making. And this morning, we're really looking forward to sharing all of these experiences with you. So we'd like to begin with Marty, who's going to give us an introduction to the Hearts for Honduras School admission.
Marty.
So, I have 5 minutes to tell you my story of 9 years as a barn child and a little history, so here I go. First, I want to welcome all of those who have been financial supporters and prayer partners for the years, because this trip wouldn't happen without you. So, thank you. As far as the Hearts for Honduras School, Joe mentioned a few things about the history of it, but let's just say that those children who attend Hearts for Honduras School would be having no education whatsoever, because they can't afford to go to public school. The irony of public school is you have to be able to afford a uniform, which means a blouse or a shirt and a skirt or trousers. So, everyone who attends, and there's over 200 children attending this school, they have grown in leaps and bounds. It started out in the garage of Patty Villanueva, a think that's the way, the only way. In her garage, she used to pull a few kids in that she thought would have no chance of ever seeing an education or being a part in her garage, and just would teach them the basics. So we've gone from her educating in her garage to a school now that goes first grade through seventh grade. They just added the seventh grade. The Dreams for the Future, a second story on the existing classrooms and going to high school. So just, it's just been a thrill to watch this adventure grow and grow and grow. All righty. Any questions?
Good.
All right. So almost 12 years ago, I became a part of the education team. That education team was such an eye-opener for me. It was involved with both Liberty Corner, but primarily Sue as our BMOC. So everything we've done through education, we worked with the teachers, we worked with the kids, we taught songs, we did plays, we had fun, we were at recess, we did so much stuff, we had meals together. We were just so engrossed with the kids, the teachers, and it was just a fantastic trip. I experienced that for a little over 4 years, and then a big red flag came up from the events team saying that they needed admin. I said to Dave Burns, there's no way I can do admin. Guess who the new admin is? Me. So being a part of the dent team, I appreciate how they include me in being part of that team, the organizer, the admin. I get to see all the kids, but I don't play. I don't sing, I don't dance, and I don't get to do the things that I really miss from the IT. But I know I'm important, and they really need me. So, that being said, 2 years ago at the dental team, they realized that it wasn't top priority to see all the kids, get them x-rayed, see a dentist, go to the parents. Well, now we're more integrated with the children. And there's not this rush in less than 5 days to see 200 kids, plus teachers, and sometimes their spouses. So it was a relief. But this trip? Wow. Over the top, something I really look forward to, because I had been with the dental team in the spring, and now I was returning in July with an awesome team. Most people of the team had not even been a part, with their eyes open. So what can I say? I'm looking forward to 2 years down the road to be a part of the team from the barn, yes, and to be a part of the demo team, and God is good.
We're about to sing a song in English and Spanish, and as an introduction to that, Mary's going to talk a little bit about the significance of music in Hearts for Hundreds.
Good morning. So, our team had the good fortune to meet and get to know Hoel. So, this is Hoel here on the side, and up there in the red. And he had a group of people to his house for dinner, and of course, music was a part of it. Hoel is the music teacher at the school, and he's really changed the music program there. Joel, it was easy to see that he loved his job, loved the students. You could see the joy in the kids' faces when they were singing for us or playing in the band. And I might add, if anybody ever gets to see the video of the band playing, it was absolutely incredible. You would not have thought that it was an elementary school band playing for you. I was just completely floored by their talent. When we talked to the students and we asked them their favorite subject in school, so many of them said the music. And we heard it over and over and over again. Like I said, Hoel has really done a lot for the program there. He puts his heart and soul into what he does. The students there not only perform for us,
but they perform in the community regularly, and that is also something that's relatively new. Patty's husband and I ate dinner at their house, and he was telling us how they are requested often because they are so good. So they perform in the community, but they also minister to the public schools. So they go out, and we also had that joy to accompany them to a public school, and they started off with a beautiful devotion and songs. And so more to see, I won't reveal more of that. You'll get to see a little clip from that visit. But again, orchestrated by Hillel, and just bringing to life and joy into those kids at the public school. So I think our whole team experienced Hillel's ministry of love through music.
A very memorable moment for Mary was an evening when Joelle led our team and the staff of the school in song. We sang, "Here I Am to Worship," 3 times. He led it in Spanish, Mary led it in English, and then we all sang it in Spanish and English. Mary has sung "Here I Am to Worship" 100 times over. But when we all sang it together this time, the feeling of love and unity in the room was overwhelming for her and for all of us. Singing together in both languages was beautiful. So let's try and recapture that beautiful feeling. Let's lift our hearts to God through music and stand and sing, "Here I Am to Worship," 3 times. First in English, second in Spanish, and finally together in both languages.
Here I am, Lord,
because they're spoken, each understanding in their own language. Please see. All those involved in the story, please stay standing. All stay standing, they're involved in the story, please. So we had the opportunity to put the children in worship, and we led the children in worship by talking about the parable of the Good Samaritan, which we are now going to show you how we did it while in Honduras.
Ustedes queriendo justificarse a sí mismos, dijo a Jesús, ¿y quién es mi prójimo? Jesús, respondiendo, Jesús dijo, un hombre descendía de Jerusalén a Jericó y cayó en manos de los ladrones, los cuales le respondieron y diciendo de que se fueron de Jerusalén. Aconteció que descendió un sacerdote por aquel camino y viéndolo pasó delante. Asimismo, un levita llegando cerca de aquel lugar y viéndolo pasó delante. Pero un samaritano que iba de camino vino cerca de él y viéndolo fue movido a misericordia y acercándose vendó sus heridas echándole aceite y vino. Poniéndolo en su cabalgadura, lo llevó al mesón y cuidó de él. Otro día al partir, sacó 2 denarios y los dio al mesonero y le dijo, cuídamele y todo lo que gastes de más, yo te lo pagaré cuando regrese. ¿Quién pues de estos 3 te parece que fue el prójimo? El que cayó en manos de los ladrones. Él dijo, el que usó de misericordia con él. Entonces Jesús le dijo, ve y haz tú lo mismo.
And then we did this.
Oh. Oh no.
I'm doing so good.
Oh boy.
Pero él, queriendo justificarse a sí mismo, dijo a Jesús, ¿y quién es mi prójimo? Respondiendo, Jesús dijo, un hombre que estudia en Jerusalén angelicó y cayó en manos de ladrones, los cuales le despojaron y viéndole se fueron dejándolo medio muerto. Aconteció que descendió un sacerdote por aquel camino y viéndolo pasó de largo. Así mismo, un levita llegando cerca de aquel lugar y viendo él pasó de largo. Pero un samaritano que iba de camino vino cerca de él y viéndolo fue movido a misericordia. Y acercándose, vendó su herida, echándole aceite y vino. Lo llevó al mesón y cuidó de él. Otro día, al partir, sacó 2 denarios y los dio al mesonero y le dijo: cuídame y todo lo que gastes de más, yo te lo pagaré cuando regrese. ¿Quién fue de estos 3 que parece que fue el problema? De cayó en manos de los ladrones. Él dijo, el que usó de misericordia con él. Entonces Jesús le dijo, ve y haz tú lo mismo.
Upside down, not by answering, but by telling a story. The parable of the Good Samaritan is his attempt to answer the question, who is my neighbor? So I'd like to invite Ed Coleman to come forward, and he's going to share a story with us about what it means to be
Hey, what's happening?
All right, so I wanted to talk about some of the kids I met in Honduras. This is Alex. I met him one of the first days we were making a bookshelf, and I saw Dylan and Tim doing like a book, and they were like going over Spanish to English words. And then I just kind of joined in, and Alex started drawing pictures of me, and we started tracing our hands together. It was really cute. And we painted together. It was really fun. I went to his classroom, and we did presentations with him. And every time I saw him in like the schoolyard or like when we were dancing, he would run and be like, "Eduardo!" Give me a hug. It was really cute. And then I met Melvin in one of his classrooms, and he loved looking at the pictures on my phone. He was like a little puppy who was following me everywhere I went. If I turned around, I was like, "Oh, hey, Melvin." And we gradually came up with like that handshake, that awesome handshake that you just saw. And I thought it was amazing how like easy it was to get close with these kids. In a matter of like 2 days, I was already this close with them. And yeah, those 2 videos were like probably the first 2 or 3 days. And throughout the week, we just grew closer and closer. And I thought it was amazing, like, how you can treat everybody as your neighbor, and everyone can be your friend and give.
So Jesus begins his story by sharing about a man who traveled the road from Jericho to Jerusalem. The thing is about this road, it might seem insignificant to us, like if we were going to travel down a road, but this road had significant meaning in the story because this was an extremely dangerous road to take. And the man who was traveling this road would have known well all of the risks. He was taking a dangerous path, and he decided to take it anyway. So Bailey is going to share with us the story about taking risks.
Okay. So one of the nights we went to teachers' houses, and me, Jada, and Eddie got to go to Darwin, who was the pastor at the school. And I think that he wanted all the young people at his house because, you know what I mean. So we met his sister and his brother and his mom, and that's his little nephew. And we bonded very close with them. We were singing karaoke at the dinner table, and we talked about funny how we were just all singing and everybody joined in, and we just met these people. And then we ate dinner, and she was a really good cook. And even though we have a language barrier of me and Eddie and Jada barely knowing Spanish, we had a Julio who was a translator taking this photo, and Darwin also speaks English, so he helped us a lot. And even through the language barrier, we learned a card game, and we played spoons and some sort of slapping game with cards. And we got very aggressive with it, just meeting these people. So we had a blast.
Thank you.
So we really kind of mentioned anyway a place that had some dangers to it, but we found the hope amidst some of the danger. And what we learned, the terrible happens next. After the man goes from the road to Jericho to Jerusalem, he is beaten by robbers. Ken Bailey tells us that, in fact, the robbers were known to rob on that road, and we know that the man fought back because if you just gave them their money, they left you alone. But we know that he fought back because he was left for dead. And he didn't think that was right, they should take his money. So he fought back. So he's left for good. And we'd like to equate that in some ways with how many people in the world treat the majority world. They leave them for dead. They don't matter. They write them off. Honduras is a very significant crisis, the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. The majority world are exactly what it says, the majority of the world who live in poverty, making less than a dollar a day. And so we learn that for many, unlike what we tell people in our culture, just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, keep pushing on or work harder and you will get ahead. One of the things you learn in a majority world country is that that is not always possible. That economic poverty is it's a very harsh reality no matter what people do. And here to give us an illustration of that is Jabel.
I'm going to equate this in an experience that I had in Honduras. One of the things missing from pictures and from most stories was the snow. So let me tell you, it was already hot and humid mid-morning in Honduras. We were greeted with the aroma of food being cooked over wood fires by street vendors. It all smelled and looked so good, but we all knew that partaking of that food would mean stomach cramps and endless hours in El Baño.
The semi-pastries were dusty, which in turn, that dust stuck to our sweat. And the product that I placed in my hair to keep it from freezing, well, the dust stuck to that, too. The result being that my hair no longer felt like hair, but more like a Brillo pad. A taxi was hailed. A taxi in Honduras was more like a 3-wheeled motorcycle with open sides, no seat belts or any kind of safety devices. The breeze was welcoming, but the exhaust fumes were not. Our taxi driver was the parent of one of our students. Conversations began with the help of a translator. As the little taxi perilously navigated the streets where vehicles rarely obey traffic laws, the story unfolded. This man, our driver, told us how he worked every day, 7 days a week, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. He had to. He had to pay rent for the taxi, and if he took a day off, he could lose that rental. If he didn't work a day, he would still have to pay the rental fee. This arrangement kept him in an endless cycle of having to work constantly with very little return. When asked why, he worked so hard, he answered that he wanted to work so his kids could have an education and a better life. He sent his children to the Harvard Honduras School because it was much better than a public education. He loved the fact that swearing was not allowed and that Christian principles were taught. As this man spoke of his family and worked so selflessly for a better future for his family, I thought of the remarks that I've heard over the years. If poor people would just get out to work, why should we welcome all the worst sorts from other countries? They just don't have the intellectual capabilities. These and the reality of the situation settled deeply into my heart.
I think her story reminds us that we should open our eyes to the people around us in our culture who are often doing back-breaking work, often unappreciated service, and pay attention. Say thank you. So the priest walks by. The law that he is keeping to the letter trumps the relationship for him. But in a very practical way, he's unwilling to take the risk because that means that he would have to go back to Jerusalem and be cleansed, which would mean he would lose income for a week, and he would also be able to not distribute the food to the poor, which was his job, because he would have been declared unclean for touching the man. The Levite, who follows on foot of the priest, is not about to challenge the priest's authority. The priest didn't stop. He's an underling to the priest. There's no way he's going to. It might mean losing his job. So the decisions before these people were really significant ones. I think we can relate to why don't we stop when there is somebody who needs assistance. Is it fear? Is it busyness? Is it that we don't have help? Is it that we feel paralyzed over the situation? Is it that we don't want to be seen with the likes of such people? Or maybe it's that we don't want to sacrifice our time or our money or our reputation. Whatever the reason, the Samaritan shows compassion and stops. We're going to hear from Jared and Dylan that are going to share with us a little bit of the temptations that they face and the risks that they took.
So, many of you know me. My name is Jared Campbell, and I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to Pastor Sue and Joanne for giving us the opportunity to do this. It's within my comfort zone to be able to do things that perhaps some other people wouldn't. However, if you do know me, my in-laws are here, my parents are here, my wife and children are here. I have many things to many people. God has blessed me with many talents, and for that I am thankful. the thing that God did not bless me with not only was height, however, also my ability to play sports. I'm not a soccer player. I have never been a soccer player. It takes me to a dark place to play soccer. Back in middle school, we all remember those hormone-ridden years where people are very cruel to one another. I decided I was going to try out for the soccer team in a town that had soccer players who had been playing soccer since they were knee-high, and I got crucified. And I was humiliated, to be honest with you. So when John Yoder, who is standing over here, Sue and Bob's son, said to me, "Hey, Jared, we need another person to play soccer in Honduras," knowing very well that this is, you know, not only a pastime for them, but a passion, I said, "No, thanks, I'm cold." John was relentless in his pursuit. I mean, I played a poker face, and I said, "You know, that's fine, I'm full of great." He said, "Oh, no, that's fine, you can do it, Jared, you can do it." Well, after peer pressure set in too much, I succumbed to it. John doesn't know any of this. I never told you about my trepidation for soccer playing. It's large. So, very grounded. So Tuesday night, we as North Americans were invited to play soccer with the Hondurans. I had never had an experience like it. I drove all the way over to the soccer field in a barrio called Rabbi, which is Rabbi, which is named for Jesus. We rode over in the back of the pickup truck, which is near and dear to my heart, and we lived and played as Hondurans live and play for an hour. I now get to brag that I played soccer in Honduras with Hondurans. I got my rear end kicked. I got my face bashed in early. My quadriceps stung like words I can't describe as public company. And the smile stayed on my face for hours and days. I really appreciate you taking me out of my comfort zone. I don't usually do that. And I just want to say to everybody, it's so refreshing. When you take something that you have such trepidation about, such overwhelming fear about, and you walk out of that, you expose yourself, I expose myself, to something that I'll never forget. I got to bond with guys that I'll never forget. I recovered physically. God willing, I'll never recover emotionally. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Hey.
Start off by saying it was just awesome being on the trip with all you guys, and you guys always feel like a second family for sure. Without being emotional here. Yeah, just amazing. And all the translators and everybody we met was just amazing to get to know people for a whole week like that. It's just something totally different than all these people would attest to that. I'll kind of go off the comfort thing. I think for most people, you know, we often think of scenarios like we go somewhere, oh, what's wrong? What's going to happen that's wrong? Like, you visualize a scenario, you're walking in somewhere, like, this could go wrong, this could go wrong. Oftentimes we don't realize that we can take the leap past the fear and just see a whole new world that's great. And a good example of that I thought was a little great of, because throughout the week there was a reiteration that I don't do group translation. I actually not want to talk to the big group. And I remember doing it multiple times, and then I came and doing this the Good Samaritan for the kids. I had 200 kids, and in the morning, they're like, "All right, yeah, what if Wilfredo do the translation?" And you didn't say, "All right," and we were just ready to go. I think that, you know, taking the original leap and getting to Honduras or any leap in your life, you know, opens up new doors for you to expand and grow.
So then comes along the Good Samaritan.
just to put this in a context, the Good Samaritan, the Samaritans were hated by the Jews, and it's kind of like a cowboy helping an Indian in the Wild West of old, or like a Jew helping a Nazi soldier. To make the Samaritan the hero of the story, as the model of compassion that trumped fear and prejudice and stereotypes. This is an example where he's saying, you know, what does they do with Harry Truman? He gives him this example, and he's basically saying love needs to supersede the law. And he says, and this is kind of what it means to be neighbor. This is what neighbor looks like. And Jesus gives us an illustration of just that.
So I think it was a Friday afternoon. There was a group of us who went to get some ice cream, and on the way we stopped to meet someone special. And this person, as you said, models the Good Samaritan story that we reenacted perfectly. She is a symbol of compassion, trumping fear, love superseding law, and a perfect example of a neighbor. And this woman is Mrs. Gonzalez, and don't be fooled by her appearance. She's actually younger than Sue. And she is so strong in spirit. She is practically the grandmother of all the squatters in Honduras. There are the people who basically don't have homes, don't have jobs, and they're just living on the land. And this woman has the strength to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's still dark outside, and she goes and gathers all this wood, puts it on her back, and then shuffles all the way back to her home, which she had helped building from the Hearts from Dirty School. And she is someone who takes in all the outcasts in her community. It doesn't matter who they are, where they come from, or where the popular story is. They all find a place in Mrs. Gonzalez's home. And she's a woman who doesn't have much in wealth or property, but she makes up for it in love. Love and trust that God will give her the strength and resources she needs to take care of everyone she welcomes into her family. God never once thinking of the cost of her neighborly deeds. And that is what Jesus has done well, as one of the greatest people I've ever met.
Things about parables and Jesus' use about parables is that you can enter into the story just about anywhere. And there are so many different characters in this particular parable that I can relate to, but there's none that right now at this point in my life that I relate to more than the gatekeeper. Mostly because my introverted self is terrified of meeting new people and trusting people in relationships. What amazes me about the innkeeper in this story is without knowing the Samaritan, who is a perceived enemy, the innkeeper trusts what the Samaritan says and trusts that the Samaritan will return to pay his debts and trusts in such a way that he is going to take care of the wounded man in his absence. Sometimes before you enter into a relationship, it takes tremendous trust in growing that relationship. And John is going to tell us a story about trust.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Buenos dias. About 6 months ago, my mother told me that we were again making a trip down to Honduras. Something foreign to me here. I told her, how can I get it? We decided upon the substance of the trip, give some presentations to the girls that would help my sister. She worked with an organization down in New Mexico that makes these kits that are readily available for girls, ages 10 through 18, whatever, basically to help them as they enter into puberty and begin a natural cycle. You know, this, how are we going to talk about this? How are we going to introduce this? So basically, it was tasked with coming down there and giving a talk to the girls and the boys about, you know, sexual abuse, the menstrual cycle, sex, you know, all very easy things to talk about with these kids who grow up in such a drastically different, you know, society that we have here. Flashback, you know, early 2000s, 2003, 2004, when we first started going down, when I first started going down, you know, what you hear about is, you know, so much different than it is now. They're probably maybe third or fourth generation of kids, you know, actually going through the process, first through the seventh, eighth grade, going on another thing, which is, you know, so amazing. But what you see now is such a more refined group of kids. The first generation of kids was, you know, right off the street, you know, whose parents were all laborers or out of work, or, you know, any kind of nightmare situation you could pick. And so they were a ragtag group that those early years, the kids at school were really just, you know, kind of insubordinate, and they would act out all the time. You could barely get into the classroom, and the teachers were a ragtag group that the school recruited. So all that was so much different back then, you know, and that's kind of, for some reason, what I still have envisioned having to deal with when we gave these talks. But as you see, me and my friend Diego there, not with us here today, but we in Spanish got to talk with these kids all about all these topics. And for me, it was just, I was so pleasantly surprised this year because the kids had so many questions and were so receptive and talked with us so willingly and openly and honestly and so forthcoming about so many hard things to talk about. And it was so beautiful for me to see how far the kids have come and to be able to be a part of that experience and just see it from my viewpoint was so incredible. So as you see, these girls were so happy to have received their kits, and it was just an incredible experience. And Honduras continues to, you know, teach me more lessons about the world than anything, any other experience ever could. So thank you.
Because the majority of girls, the onset of puberty, the majority of girls quit going to school because of their periods. They don't, they can't afford what they need, and they do that. These are kits that provide everything they need so they can continue to.
It's amazing when we risk relationships that we can be surprised with unexpected joy and God in the midst of those relationships. So as Jesus framed the parable of the Good Samaritan, it is in relationship that we become neighbor to each other. It's when we show compassion that we become neighbors. Paul is going to share a story about being vulnerable, taking risks, opening your heart, and becoming neighbor.
Good morning, everyone. The one day in Honduras, we were given a choice of either painting, help to paint a mural, or to help build and paint shelves with the parents, with the women. So I decided, since I'm not really a fan of painting murals, that I would stay behind and help to paint the shelves once they were put together, which took a lot longer than we thought it would take, Jared. Anyway, so we'll get to the task of painting the shelf, and I don't speak any Spanish, and the women that I was painting with don't speak any English. So I kind of looked at the woman next to me and went, and she kind of looked at me and went, and I was like, you know, trying to say like, oh, nice hair, you look beautiful, and she was like, so I'm looking around for a translator. Joanne's working with us, and Joanne speaks a little more Spanish than I do. So Joanne says to me, oh, Paula, Anna, the one in black, they people have black on, but anyway. She said, Anna's a single mom. She has three children, and she adopted her sister's child. And so I thought, okay, well, I can either continue to bob and smile and pretend that I'm trying to make conversation, or I can just, like, go forward and be vulnerable. So I said to Will Fraley, I said, can you come over here? And so he came over. And I said, can you tell Anna that I'm also a single parent and that I want her to know the struggles that I've been through raising a daughter by myself? So he came over and he translated. And so I proceeded to just tell Anna a story about going through life and worrying, like, I know she struggles with how you're going to pay the bills, how you're going to feed your child, how you hope that your child has the best life that you can possibly give your child, and just that idea of what she was going through. So when he told her that, her eyes literally lit up, and she said to him, wow, she's a single mom too. And so I realized that although it's really hard for all of us, sometimes you just have to be vulnerable, and you have to just say the thing that's going to start developing a relationship with somebody. And it's really easy to say all the good things and tell her how beautiful her hair is and how beautiful she's dressed and how I'm so happy to be there. But what really meant the most to her was for me to just tell her that I could relate to her and that I had something that she was also going through.
One of the amazing gifts that we received when we were in Honduras was the tremendous and incredible hospitality of the Honduran people. There was not enough to say when Monday, one of our first activities was we made a dinner of macaroni and cheese and Rice Krispie treats and gravy. We did it. And we brought this meal to their homes and they ate it. I mean, we were presented with this amazing food all week, and they just showered us with all these gifts. But I think the thing that struck me most was their willingness to go the extra mile when we sat at table. The relationships that were formed, the beauty that we shared, it was literally the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we discovered our common theme. I'm sorry. When we sit down and we dine together at table, Jesus is present with us in all of the diversity of all of our experiences. We come together and we are welcomed at this table. Jesus welcomes everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what you've been through, no matter where you come from, we are welcome at this table. We are all invited to be nurtured, to be loved. No matter who we are, no matter what we've been through, we come bearing all, sharing all to this table. We come as we are, of our own free choice, just as we are. And so with that in mind, Chelsea's going to share a story about hospitality and the amazing hospitality of the Honduran people.
One of the struggles that many of my teammates shared about this trip before we left was we weren't sure what we could give down there, what skills we would bring to the mission. But since it was an immersion trip, we decided to let go and be willing to immerse ourselves. One of the first chances for this was when we were invited to the students' homes for dinner. A chance for immersion, yes, but truthfully, it made me nervous. Honduras is notoriously dangerous. I visited a student's home on my last trip, and I know how modest they are.
Plus, we had a special script prepared as a gentle way to refuse any homemade food since our systems might not be able to handle it. As well as that, we had to prepare the meal, which was the macaroni and cheese. So, as our pickup truck traveled along one of these pothole gravel streets, I mused myself, was I really bringing a meal fit for a fucking 3-year-old to a stranger's house? When me and Mary and Diego got to the house, the car couldn't park on the street because it was too narrow. The houses looked like a large shed or a detached garage, but the mom greeted us with a smile, but she was sweating profusely. We went into the first room of the house, and it was simply furnished. So some families in Honduras rent one room in a whole house, and the family just lived in this room. So I didn't know if that's what was happening in our house. So we gathered around this table and passed the food Thanksgiving style. We made small talk about parts of Honduras school, our travel plans, the upcoming rain, kind of like college experience and superficial conversations. But since they were so superficial, I wondered if building the relationship or forging the bond that were the purpose of this whole experience were actually happening. And I noticed that the mom was still sweating, and I felt like hostess anxiety kicking in. I looked at everyone's plate to see how much they had eaten. I refilled soda cups, tried to make a little brother laugh, but all of it felt false, like it was falling flat. Suddenly, I had an idea and tried to start again. I turned to the mom and I said, I know how stressed I feel when I need to clean the house for my mother-in-law when she comes over. I can't imagine how you must have felt. And luckily, she laughed and leaned back in her chair and wholeheartedly agreed with me. She got it, we connected. We found the universal, and that's what I learned about hospitality. You don't need Ethan-Allen furniture, seam-clean carpet, or knickknacks that pass away love fest. Her hospitality came from her opening her home and her heart for us. We made our connection when we were vulnerable enough to laugh at our shared struggle.
Jesus opens his table to us, opens us to God's heart and God's love as we come and we share this meal together. We remember the night when Jesus gathered his friends, his ragtag army of friends from so many different places and spaces, and gathered to get them together to share a meal, reminding them that God's liberating presence is with them, that God, the God who freed the slaves, who brought them into a new land of hope, that they could share this meal together and be reminded that God's love is in them and moving through them and around them in all times and places. And during that meal, Jesus took the bread, and he gave God thanks, and he blessed the bread, and he broke it, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. As often as you eat this, do this in remembrance of me." And in the same way, during the supper, he took the cup, and he gave God thanks, and he blessed the cup, saying, "This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood. As often as you drink of it, do this in remembrance of me." When we eat this bread and drink this cup, we remember that God's love is with us, encouraging us, nurturing us always. And so now these gifts are ready to be received, and Holy Spirit, we ask that you bless us as we share this meal together. Come, for all things are now ready.
Y eso le hace llegar todos los días.
So let's sing together with Glenn.